Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of naturenow@kptz.org.
Hello, and welcome to Nature Now. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and this week we are enjoying what has become a holiday tradition for Nature Now, talking with Monica Fletcher about the annual Audubon Christmas bird count. Welcome back, Monica.
Thanks, Nan. It's great.
Well, Monica is a friend and she's an ace birder. And Monica knows the mysteries of birding. She easily spots and identifies birds in the wild by their appearance, color patterns, shape, bills, and other visual clues. She also knows their myriad songs and calls so well that often she knows which species are near even when she can't see them. But there's more to really great birding. Monica knows about their behavior in different seasons, their migration times and patterns, favorite habitats, and even which types of trees and plants each species prefers, and where in the canopy to find each species. And I must share that going birding with Monica is an amazing treat. But before we talk with Monica, let's hear this week's mystery sound. So these critters, well, and of course they're birds, make a wide range of curious calls and songs. Let's hear a different sound clip of this same bird. So a little bit of a hint. These little fellows are around our region most of the year, but currently there at least seem to be great flocks present in the trees and the feeders around town. Well, this has been the week of the winter solstice, an astronomical event of great cultural significance throughout history and in many parts of the world. In 2020, the winter solstice occurred on Monday, December 21st at 2:02 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. In the Northern Hemisphere, the winter solstice is the day with the shortest period of daylight and the longest night of the year, when the sun is at its lowest daily maximum elevation in the sky. Did you know that the word solstice is derived from the Latin sol, which we know means sun, and the Latin sestare, which means to stand still? At the solstice, the sun appears to stand still. The seasonal movement of the sun's daily path, as seen from the earth, pauses at a northern or southern limit before reversing direction. This year, the winter solstice also saw an event that astronomers are calling the Great Conjunction, when Jupiter and Saturn aligned in the night sky, marking the planet's closest encounter in nearly 400 years. A conjunction occurs when planets appear incredibly close to one another in the sky. They line up with Earth in their respective orbits. When Saturn and Jupiter converged on December 21st, the two planets appeared as a single bright point of light to the naked eye. They will remain in close alignment for a few days. You still have a chance to see them by looking toward the southwest just after sunset. Of course, that also requires it not to be raining. While the two planets may be viewed as one point of life, they will remain hundreds of millions of miles apart in space, according to a statement from NASA. And now to our conversation with Monica. We probably ought to start with a little bit of background, since we're not sure that anybody who's listening has heard some of our earlier conversations. So Monica, just refresh us a bit with this kind of a brief history of the Audubon Christmas bird count.
Okay, well, this is what was originally nationwide count that started 121 years ago in 1900. We say 21 because the count actually crosses into the next year. And its origins were a nascent Audubon organization's attempt to counteract the side hunt tradition, which was a Christmas hunt where people would go out in two teams and kill as many things as they possibly could. They left plant life out, but basically killed birds and animals. And
presumably rats. The winner was who killed the most.
Yes, exactly. So this was also the period when hats had feathers and sort of conservation was really budding in, at the turn of the century. And so the first count had 25 different roots and compiled about 89 species. And in comparison, this year has 2,645 roots from North America to South America. It has over 80,000 participants walking on that day. And our count alone here in Jefferson County always almost hits 120.
Wow.
So anyway, it's a huge study, and it's considered one of the longest citizen science or community science projects in the world.
So how long have you been involved in the Christmas bird count in Jefferson County?
Well, pretty much since I moved here 15 years ago. So,
okay.
But our count began in 1977 here. And I just recently took over as compiler from Dan Wagner, who has been doing this for 30 years, you know.
Wow.
With Dick Johnson originally. So gives you an idea. 1977, 40 something years.
So what is your route when you do the Christmas bird count? And what's your sort of normal pattern? And what do you do?
Okay, well, usually there's a thing called the PT circle, which is 15 miles in diameter with the center around Indian Island. And within that, there are, this year, there are 14 routes walked by usually one proficient birder and a crew, a recorder. And usually we invite newcomers to join and get a feel for, you know, the fine scale of each of these routes. And my my particular route is Point Hudson to Chetsmoka Park to Morgan.
Along the beach.
Along the beach. Yeah, exactly. There's an adjacent route that starts at the same place and goes towards the mill. So Chetsmoka, Morgan Hill, Fort Worden, Point Wilson, Chinese Gardens, but not North Beach. You know, we had someone else doing North Beach proper. So that's the extent.
I know this year was different. I remember the weather on Saturday where it was amazingly windy and rainy. How does that affect what you can actually see and count?
Well, that's really a good question because it really affects the birding a lot. The morning it was warm, so you could use your hands on your binoculars without freezing. That's an advantage. But other than that, the morning was fine, but about 11:30 rain started, and that's not fun. But the light was so flat that I really felt bad. We were seeing great numbers of birds, but for some of the people that weren't as familiar with birding that were on my route, it's like I'm trying to describe a house finch and there's not a drop of color. So that was bad. And then the afternoon was just windy, and windy just means all the birds hunker down and they make, you know, pathetic little mewing contact calls, and that's about it. And that can be challenging.
So the contact calls are them sort of reassuring each other in their flock that they're okay. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, in this case, I'm really talking about a couple of like a mated pair of towhee deeps.
Oh, yeah.
So they're not really flocking, but they're keeping contact.
Well, and I know the juncos sort of chatter at each other just to be in contact. Yeah.
Exactly like that. The Pacific wren. Stuff like that.
So there's something else different about this year.
And
that's the coronavirus. And I'm curious both for the bird count as well as for your sort of regular birding practice. What's it like to bird in the era of COVID-19?
Yes. Well, I've had almost a year to like think about this. And shockingly, for the Christmas bird count, the after bird count potluck is out.
Of course.
And the social distancing presented problems. The single track trails, it was hard to keep people apart. And I would end up sort of birding alone on a single track trail and come back and report my numbers to our.
Oh, of course. Yes.
Yeah. Because, you know, to string five people along in that sort of situation was tough. And we had a couple of vulnerable people that were really conscientiously keeping socially distanced.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in general, the whole count has been changed because of this vulnerability. We have cancer survivors and elderly and, you know, people that cannot afford to do this. So many of the routes take a proficient birder and their spouse or their household member, and they walk it alone. So the thing that drove me craziest, because COVID for me personally has turned me into a solo birder. You know, I don't bird with people much this year, but in order to wear a mask and bird, one must hold one's breath while looking at 50, 60, 70 odd ducks, right? And I can't hold my breath long enough. So it's a constant picking up the binoculars, holding my breath, getting as much as I can, pulling them away so they don't fog up, pulling them back.
Oh, so it's the fogging up that's the issue.
Fogging up, okay. Yeah, the fogging up due to the mask, I should have mentioned.
Yeah.
But that was a real challenge. So you're not only hiking around, you're holding your breath for minutes at a time. And it was funny. I think that's about it. You know, it was certainly doable and fun even so.
Did you find during this past year that you birded differently? Or, I mean, you already said you birded alone mostly, but was your birding different? Did you go different places or different times? Or, I mean, all of us have dealt with how to change our lives, but
right.
How did it change yours?
Well, it definitely did. First off, when there was the major lockdown and the parks were closed, that was probably locally one of the pinnacle experiences of walking into Fort Flagler Park, where no one was there, no dogs to chase off shorebirds and eagles sitting on the beach.
Oh,
it was cool. Just this magical time of the birds have regained their territory, and on a nice day even, you know, so I had to come along and disturb them. But there's been that. And then I've really been birding locally, obviously, and I've changed the way I bird. I don't go out and try to maximize what I see. I have been doing something completely different, which is I go to one place, like the stretch of Larry Scott Trail from Boat Haven to the mill, and walk it every day until I don't get a new species. And then I'll move on to Kai Tai Lagoon, and I'll walk that until every day until I don't get a new species. And it's been wonderful, you know, where I think Kai Tai, by the end of a week, I was at 78 species. So, you know, that's one thing that's changed. And the localness, I mean, I go as far as Maristone Island.
Yeah, right, yeah. In a way, I'm kind of sensing a sort of a silver lining to attaching locally.
Truly, in a new way, you know, that isn't acquisitive, it's more informative.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a nice way of saying it. So back to the Christmas bird count. It's been going on for, you said, over 30 years in Port Townsend area, Jefferson County?
Yeah, 40, over 40.
Over 40. If you look at the data over those 40 years, what can you tell? Or do you see trends? Or is the data from year to year influenced by enough differences, such as like this year, the weather, that it's hard to see those trends? What do you see?
Well, it really is just a snapshot of a day. And within that, it has certain parameters and formulas that measure participant involvement, like how many people are actually on the ground within that 15-mile diameter circle, effort, mileage covered, and a bunch of data. And it's going to have implications that the big number crunching National Audubon does. And I personally haven't gone back and compared Western Grebe in 1977 to Western Grebe today, but they have. And so we get a report that comes from all of this about mid-year. It doesn't come out right away because it takes a long time to do.
Right, to compile and analyze, sure.
Right, so like I have reports from last year of trends. I don't yet have this year's, of course, but I have some anecdotal experience from our route this year. So it doesn't answer the why of decline or increase, but it just points to places where further study can happen.
Mm. Yeah, Monica, you talked about sort of anecdotal information, and I'm sure as you have done the bird count over the years, you've seen at least things that have impressed you as different or changing. Can you share just a couple of those with us?
Yes. There's sort of, as a result of the big data crunching, there's trends like barred owls are increasing, hummingbirds are increasing in our region. But there's also the decline of almost 9% per year of evening grosbeak. That's of concern. And I'm particularly interested in the alcids, the seabirds that float on our water, including the marbled murrelet and the common murre and the rhinoceros auklet. So there's some interesting trends there that I've only gone back like 10 years. There's a wonderful site at the Audubon called the Trend Viewer. So this is where I get these figures. So common murre is declining by 4% a year. Murrelet, the marbled murrelet, is actually increasing 4% a year over the last 10 years. And rhinoceros auklet sort of holding steady. So those are a few of our alcids that we know well. Grebes, the western grebe continues to decline at 6% per year locally.
Yeah, you know, I remember decades ago commonly seeing western grebes and being completely fascinated by them. And I'm not sure that I've seen more than one or two in the last numbers of years.
Yeah, this year, I don't know. We've gotten a report of one so far, but not all the reports are in. Yeah, so that is significant. The other direction, red-necked grebe, which nationally is declining at about 1.5%. Our little Port Townsend Circle last year had the world record number of red-necked grebe of over 700. So we really rank.
You know, it'd be interesting to spend lots of time with you just sort of speculating about what's going on, but we can't do that. In interest of time, we now need to revisit that mystery sound. So let's hear it again. Well, that was the pine siskin. The pine siskin is a small, it's a heavily streaked finch. It's got a little pointed bill, short notched tail, and little sort of subtle yellow lines on the wings and the tail. I see it at my bird feeder a lot. Quoting the Cornell Ornithology Lab website, this nomadic finch ranges widely and erratically across the continent each winter in response to seed crops, better suited to clinging on branch tips than to hopping along the ground, these brown-streaked acrobats flash yellow wing markings as they flutter while feeding or as they explode into flight. The flocks are gregarious, and you may hear their insistent wheezy twitters before you see them. Now, Monica, I've got a question for you, because I know there's a number of folks in Port Townsend who've been sort of chattering back and forth about, it seems like, the pine siskins are especially numerous this year. So I'm curious, are they really, or what's going on, or what's the story with the pine siskins?
That was a fun question that you asked me, and I'm glad you gave me some time on that. I thought they were just being normal because I often have flocks of like 600 or so in my conifer yard here. But there is apparently an eruption. You passed on that link.
We're talking an eruption, not an eruption, right, like Kilauea in Hawaii just now. So eruption.
Not volcanoes, but IRR eruption, which is interesting. That's it's an erratic extension of a bird's boundary due to food resource needs. So in this case, These are birds that are coming down from Canada that are not finding the seed sources. And people think, oh, well, you know, is that because of the beetle damage and this sort of thing? And it's often, it could be that, but it's also a product of reproduction success. Like there's so many babies that, you know, there's these need for more territory at the time. But we apparently are having a pine siskin eruption where they're coming. They come always here in the winter. This is not surprising, but they're being shown up, you know, south of Oregon, Gulf states, you know, much further along the East Coast where they're not as prevalent. And so I, you know, I had not noticed an increase, but so I looked up the numbers and the highest number we've got in the last decade has been 570 at a Christmas bird count. And so that's not the highest count ever done in the county. That's just for a particular CBC day. But just on my route alone, which is about 6 miles, we saw over 700.
That was this year, over 700.
Yeah. And so I haven't even gotten back the other reports. So anecdotally, yes, all of you folks who think you're overrun, it appears you are.
No, you really are.
And we're also, in my opinion, having a cedar waxwing eruption. I saw 180 in one spot.
Really?
Near the Point Hudson. And, you know, eBird kicks a number like that back and says, but yes, it was true.
I want you to take me out to see them because I so rarely see the cedar waxwings and they're such beautiful, handsome birds. Well, I think we have reached the end of our program. We hope you've enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news and information about the natural community where we live. Today's sound engineer and editor is Nora Petrich. Nature Now airs here on KPTZ at 91.9 FM on Wednesdays and Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. and most Thursdays in the 5 p.m. hour following the news. Recent podcasts are also available at the KPTZ website. And as we are ending this year of 2020, I want to note that today's program is the 494th Nature Now. Stay with us in February as we celebrate our 500th anniversary show.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? Our ending music today is In the Bleak Midwinter, performed by Lorena McKinnett.
So choose.